Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another episode of the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Justin Rogers, joined as always by Will Birchfield. 10-1, Will. 10-1. This is 1934 territory right here, pal.
You know, I had the pleasure before one of our pregame shows on the Salute to Service weekend of meeting a World War II veteran who is the only person I know who is currently alive that was alive when the Lions were last 10-1. It puts into perspective just how long it's been since this team has been this good.
90 years. I mean, it's really, really difficult. And what is it, this week they can move to a 10-game winning streak, which would match also that 1934 season. So, yeah. I mean, I don't need to tell these people. They're appreciating it. This is a special year. Went down to Indy, took care of business in the most take care of business fashion ever. Kind of a clunky performance offensively, but it doesn't matter. Your defense is great. Aaron Glenn's going to be a head coach somewhere. He's earned it.
Yeah.
But another round of injuries, Will. They are stacking up. I tried to compare and contrast like the week one snap participation versus, you know, last week's in Indian. It wasn't as dramatic as I thought, but they're missing so many dudes, right? Davenport, Aiden. I don't know why I led with Davenport. Aiden, Barnes.
Likely to be injured.
Yeah, Anzalone, and now, you know, very, very likely, almost expected now that Carlton Davis won't play.
Yeah.
And look at it. Terron Arnold didn't play last week, and the absence of a starting cornerback, I thought, might have been the most glaring miss or absence that we've seen thus far in this defense, and certainly a concern heading into this week.
Yeah, I mean, by the end of that game, they were missing six starters on defense, which, if I'm doing the math correctly, is more than half of their starting defense. And they still kept the opponent out of the end zone for the second straight game. That was another Aaron Glenn masterclass. And you know you're a great team when you can play collectively probably a B-minus game and still win by 18 points, which generally only happens in the NFL when you play your A or A-plus game. That's how well-oiled this team is right now. But, yeah, these are injuries that are concerning, obviously, but also relieving to know that they aren't long-term things. And, like, that flurry of misfortune that hit this team in the second half in Indianapolis was, for a Super Bowl contender, also a flurry of good fortune, because – four players went down, if you include St. Brown, and none of them, it seems like, besides maybe Raymond, are going to miss significant time. And injuries are inevitable. What you hope to avoid at this point in the year are season-ending injuries. And for Decker, Davis, and St. Brown to all get injured in that game, but likely be back on the field by next week, is actually a major bullet dodge. Like, you have to feel pretty good about that, knowing that at some point a bunch of guys were going to get hurt, but to avoid the long-term thing is a huge bullet dodge and a huge relief for this team. It has to be.
Yeah, I'm not as confident as you that Davis will be back for that Thursday game against Green Bay, just kind of the way he was walking after the game. And even in the locker room today, he had, you know, the whole electrode set up on the knee, which, by the way, if you people don't have the little, stem electrode treatments, it's awesome, especially for back injuries. I love that stuff. Go pick that up at whatever your local pharmacy. But which injury are you more worried about this week against Chicago, Will? Is it Dan Skipper starting in place of Taylor Decker, whether that's right or left side, with Montez Sweat, you know, on that other side of that pass rush, or the prospect of, you know, we don't really know. I'm not confident that Kendall Vildor is going to be the guy again this week. I don't know if it's Mosley or Meek Robertson or even Khalil Dorsey. I don't know. It's definitely, I think, up in the air with the way Vildor played in Indy.
Given the way those games against the Bears went last year, more concerning to think that they may have to start Dan Skipper at left tackle. And I don't mean that as a knock on Dan Skipper. Like, he is a very good swing tackle in the NFL. He fulfills the role that this team signed him to do, but they don't envision him starting and pass protecting 30 times a game if he has to against what is still a really good defensive line. And the Bears did get after the Lions in a pretty significant way in both of those games last year, including the one that they won in Detroit. And that's, to me, how the Bears can make this game a little bit messy for the Lions on Thursday, is collapsing maybe the edges, or at least one of the edges of that offensive line and getting after Jared Goff. So that one concerns me. I also feel better about Emmanuel Mosley possibly starting on the outside. I mean, I know they looked at him more as maybe a slot guy entering this season, but he does have a number of reps back in his San Fran days as a proven, accomplished outside corner. And I think after getting his feet wet last week, he can maybe step into that role a little bit more confidently and seamlessly this week. So I don't have much concern about that one. It's the offensive line and missing Decker and Skipper most likely stepping in that just gives me a little bit more pause.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I do think Mosley's going to see time this week. He didn't. They wanted to just, the way he said it, touch grass, but I don't think that's what he meant in that first game. You know, just get his feet out there to get over the mental hurdle of being back after missing 2 years. But, I don't know if they're going to run him out there for 50, 60, 70 snaps this week. I think it's probably more likely a rotation where he sees a series here, a series there, and that's, it's going to be great. Anything you can get out of him is great, but I think all your points are really valid about the missing Decker. You know, he for as bad or below average as the Lions offensive line played in Indianapolis, and they definitely played well below their standards, Decker was, I thought, the most consistent piece after going through the film, in terms of both pass blocking and run blocking. And it's just, I know he's probably had a season that he would say was a little below his standards, but he's still just kind of one of the most trustworthy pieces you have on the entire offense. And it's just tough missing that. Whereas I watched Vildor get torched a bit by, arguably the least accurate quarterback in football. He's got problems covering deep. And this Bears receiving core is just, I've always had just a tremendous amount of appreciation for DJ Moore. Mm-hmm. Super underrated. Keenan Allen might be the best route runner in terms of just precision and releases. I mean, certainly up there with like a guy like Davante Adams, and then Roma Dunze is still coming into his own, but everybody saw him in college. I mean, he was just he was a monster. And so there, I saw what they did last week, Caleb putting up 340 yards. They can do that. They can go to the air, they can attack you, and really stress you that way. And the Lions pass rush is what it is. It was certainly better against Indianapolis, but it's not ever going to be one of those elite game threatening pass rushes. So with Dan Campbell saying that they're operating with more of the quick game, the slants, the stuff that Arnold is a little susceptible still, I'm a little worried about how the Lions secondary is going to hold up in this one.
Yeah, I think what gives me assurance there is that they have the two safety nets in Kirby Joseph and Brian Branch. And Ben Johnson likes to talk about erasers on offense. Yeah. Those are two of the best erasers on defense in the NFL. And there was a play Kirby made last week, which didn't result in a pick, but it darn near did, where before Richardson even looked in the direction of his throw, Kirby could judge by his body language where he was going to go with the ball. I think it was second quarter, but anyways, it was a deep one down the sideline. It was a deep one to the sideline, to the right side of the field from our vantage point.
And I too deep vantage or point too wide.
Yeah. And Kirby's like leg was twitching in the direction where he was going to run before Richardson, I think, even fully committed to making the throw. And just a way of saying, like, against younger quarterbacks, Branch and Kirby have such a good command of what offenses want to do that I think they can cover for whatever deficiencies the cornerbacks might have on the outside. And they'll know that the Bears might want to beat them deep with Moore or with Adunze or with Allen. And Kirby and Brian will do their best to make sure that doesn't happen. It just feels like that's the best answer for the Lions' secondary absences right now.
I'm questioning your credibility here. You were seven decks up right by me. I don't know how you saw any leg twitching. Were you looking like straight right through the binoculars at Kirby's knee? What's going on up here?
Yeah, I do a solo cam on Kirby's knee.
Makes sense. That's how you know it's a pickable pass. Branch too. I mean, Branch had that one where he drove down and definitely should have intercepted it. I snagged him really quickly in the locker room today. Everybody was kind of racing around. It's the holidays, meetings, everything's truncated. But I had talked to him after week one where he dropped that pick right in his chest. And all he said to me was, it's not going to happen next time. And what he'd do, he's ripped off four interceptions. I said, well, are we back to square one? We got another motivating, not drop per se, but just a half tick too late.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, that's a really good way to put it. He goes, sometimes those are good to remind you how few opportunities you get to make the play. And so I think you just always got to be alert on Brian Branch, you know, definitely making the play. Quickly want to touch on a transaction today, Will. Something we've been talking about for feels like since training camp, even though we didn't have the podcast in training camp, but certainly in our conversations, James Houston was let go today. And, it just feels like he's been teetering on the edge of this roster for two seasons. And, I don't know if it was a disconnect with Brad and Dan or Dan just taking doing something beneficial for Brad or not complaining about it, but, he just ran out of chances is the best way to put it. And it sucks. The eight sacks were amazing that rookie year, but it was never getting back to that. It was clear.
It was clear. And, for as vague and nondescript as Dan Campbell's answer was today about the release, I thought it was also pretty telling. I mean, he just simply said, look, it didn't work out. It never quite worked out. And we gave him the chances. We had him up for a number of games, and it just didn't work out. And that felt like a gentle way of saying it wasn't ever going to work out. We had seen enough in this defense of James Houston to know that the match just wasn't what it was in 2022. And I have no doubt that he may go on to find success. This is me talking now on a different team. He still has some pass rush ability, and he'll probably end up in a defense that allows him to use more of the bend and the speed around the edge that he like so successfully employed in 2022. But it's just more of, as we've said so much on this podcast and other places, a pocket crushing defense. And it just didn't and wasn't ever going to fit his play style. And I thought Dan Campbell said that without literally saying that today in his answer. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I would say this in that, I guess, expanding on a little bit, he's going to need a defense that isn't rule heavy.
Yeah.
I think that's something that, we can say is James Houston really struggled being assignment sound. Mm-hmm. And there's every position in football. There's rules. You hear it all the time. You hear it in this organization. You heard it with the Patricia organization, like, do your job. And if you're not doing your job, then you're forcing the guy next to you to compensate. And the whole thing starts coming down like dominoes.
Yeah.
And, Houston, they tried him out off ball linebacker, which there are way more rules and responsibilities. And it's a big part of why that failed is it just, he was too much of a freelancer or, the rules didn't click. He didn't see, whatever. It didn't work here. I think that was a big part of it. And if, he gets to a team that just says, pin your ears back and go get the quarterback, one gap attack, however you want, you could see it. I don't know if the bend was the same after the broken ankle.
Yeah.
We certainly, I don't think, saw the Gumby-like bendability that he showed, but he's got really good hands. When he does bend, he's a threat to get that corner, and he closes space.
Still can do
as
that.
As well as anybody. It's just it's a matter of staying off the blocks, and I hope he succeeds. I mean, you get to know these guys, and you hope for it, but it will not be here. All right, speaking of Thanksgiving and having lots of stuff to do, we have lots of stuff to do. This is going to be a little bit of a truncated episode. But we did not skip the Ocker interview. Came close.
No, we would never.
We got dicey again. But we found a backup quarterback, formerly the most popular position in Detroit sports, but they're not chanting for backup quarterbacks at these stadiums. They are chanting Jared Goff. But we caught up with Hendon Hooker in the locker room, and we will listen what he had to say coming out of the break.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You're back with the Detroit Football Network podcast. And Will, I did some groundwork when you were doing some press conferences today. I kind of lined up some interviews for the future weeks, some big names. I'm
just hopeful. A little tease.
I swung for the fences a little bit. So we'll see how that comes through. I'm even more happy with the way these things finish than, you know, when we started. We seem to pull some good questions and quotes out of these guys. So here is our locker room interview today with backup quarterback Hendon Hooker. We got the Detroit Football Network podcast. We're joined by backup quarterback Hendon Hooker. Hendon, do you have a Thanksgiving routine down yet here? I mean, it's only been, you know, a little bit of time, but do you got a routine with the game and the family?
I don't have a routine for Thanksgiving, but I have a game routine that I try to keep the same no matter what time the day is. If it's an early game, like on Thursday, then I'll get out of the hotel pretty early, go home, make sure my family's straight, put them in the car, then go to the facility.
So we're required to ask this question during Thanksgiving week. What is Hendon Hooker's ideal Thanksgiving plate? Turkey, ham, and then what are your preferred sides?
I'm going sweet potato casserole. I'm going my mother's stuffing. It's really good. We're going collard greens, saffron rice, probably a pasta.
Yeah,
for the first plate.
Does it make you hungry thinking about it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Is there any seats left at the Hooker table this year?
We can see. We can see if there's some.
What's special about mom's stuffing? I'm a stuffing guy.
I don't know. She just
secrets.
She just does something. I guess because it's made with a lot of love.
It's proprietary. You gotta keep that in house.
Just to close the theme. What are you actually skipping on Thanksgiving? Like, what side are you just out?
Oh, I don't do mac and cheese.
Really?
Yeah.
No. Like for any meal?
Or just any cheese.
Just not, interesting.
This is a very controversial opinion.
I mean,
you actually can't be on the podcast anymore.
I knew that. I always kept that to myself. No, I can't do any cheese. It's bad for me.
Yeah. All right, healthy eater. Smart guy. Yeah.
So walk us through the season. You came into to training camp. You were competing for a job. A little bit up and down. You know, had the finger injury and whatnot that you know, pushed it down a little bit there. And now you're week 11 in this thing, ready to come in at the drop of a hat. You know, how have you grown the most, you know, maybe during the course of this year?
I think just confidence-wise is the biggest thing. You know, getting back into the field of playing football and taking command of the huddle and, you know, bringing that dog out that I played with over the years and just being, you know, a great teammate as well. That factors in huge. Supporting guys, you know, when things aren't going well, trying to motivate them and boost the morale back up in the huddle to continue to keep pushing them. Everyone in the locker room is like-minded. So when those things come around, you know, all of us are motivating each other, you know, to keep going. And you know, be successful in whatever plays are coming in.
I assume you've been QB1 your whole life, so usually you're the guy coming out of a game when it's 42-6 in the fourth quarter. What's it like to be on the other side of that and be the one going in a circumstance like that?
I wish that was the case.
Yeah, okay.
It's a true underdog story.
Yeah.
So, from a young age, I remember being a quarterback competition when I was 10, 11 years old, and my dad was the coach. And so me and the guy were splitting times. I would get a first half, he'd get a second half, or he'd get the first half, I get the second half. So been in quarterback competitions for a long time. Transitioning to high school when I'm backing up Emmanuel Moseley.
Yeah.
So I was going in crazy, when it was – you know, when we were beating guys, you know, 42-0 in the second quarter. So, whoa, I get a whole half. That's cool. And I remember my first time getting into a playoff game. We were playing North Davis, and they had Shy Tuttle. And I was like, man, I hope he doesn't hit me. I'm a freshman. He's a big-time recruit. I'm like, man, I hope I don't get hit on this. But then going to college, competed all throughout college except for my last year. It still felt like a competition because me and Joe just are competitors and push each other to be better. And then getting here, you know, still competing. So
how long did Pops coach you for?
That 1 year.
Just the
1 year? Yeah, that was the only year of contact football that he coached me.
Okay. He was telling me, like, come on, let me get some more run.
But he's like, oh, no. We got to get better, man. He kept it real with us, from a young age and pushed us hard.
I need the E-Man scouting report. Tell us what kind of quarterback he was.
E-Man scouting report.
Yeah. QB scouting report.
If he breaks out of the pocket, you can count it six.
Oh, wow.
For sure. If you give him one-on-one, he can throw it deep. Other than that, you know, we're going to hand the ball off and run some speed options.
He's not getting to that third progression.
No. He's taking off. He's taking off. He was so fast, and he still is so fast. But him being like 157, 160 in high school, he was flying. He was flying.
Yeah.
And then turn around and guard the best player that the other team had on defense.
I mean, that makes sense. He's gunning still, so that makes sense.
Who is the best player you played against in college, best defensive player that you lined up across from in college?
Non-Tennessee guy.
Non-Tennessee.
Played against.
I mean, my guy Jalen Carter was a beast.
Yeah.
And then that whole entire Georgia defense 2021.
Also the Eagles defense in 2024.
You know, Philadelphia Bulldogs. But that whole defense was amazing. And I thought we were gonna blow them out because the first drive, like, we were hitting on all cylinders. Stalled out. But so.
Is, you know, I don't know if I'm gonna ask this, but like the injury, obviously the worst part is the injury and the rehab. But like, did you feel like you got robbed of a chance at the Heisman? I mean, a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, if I knew that all I needed was one more game, I would have went in and threw a screen and came out.
You weren't even eligible?
Yeah, I was.
But when you said one more game, I didn't know if that was...
Yeah, I needed to play that last game of the regular season so I could...
Yeah. You ever find yourself, like, awake at night thinking about that and the opportunities it may have passed you by? Like, I still think about shots that I missed in high school across 15 years ago. Like, do you find yourself replaying some of those moments in your mind or moments that you missed out on?
Yeah, for sure. And then, like, my family and friends, they could be watching ESPN. It could be an old game on. They're sending it to me. So I still think about when I was at Virginia Tech and I missed some passes to win the game. So those things, you know, it sticks with you forever.
That's like the disease of the professional athlete. Like, you can't shake it, but probably makes you better in the long run.
Definitely does. And, like, the Heisman thing wasn't even something that I was really trying to go get. I wanted to win SEC championship and win national championship. I remember Joe Milton, he used to talk about, you know, I want to win a Heisman.
Yeah.
I remember him having the picture on his iPad, you know, to go win the Heisman. So I was like, man, we got to win it back to back.
So give me this year's college football playoff prediction. Give me the final four. And who wins it all. I'm guessing.
I'm going to go Tennessee.
Yeah, who do they beat in the championship?
For sure.
Who do they beat in the semis first?
In the semi, I got rematched with Georgia.
Oh, I like it.
In the semifinals. And then
does Texas get there? Does Oregon get there?
I like Oregon and Tennessee in the championship. Nice. But DG is putting on a show. He's been putting on a show. Watched a lot of film on him coming from UCF because he played with Coach Heupel. So I watched a lot of film on DG. And I love his game.
Do you like the format in general? I mean, to me as a fan, it seems exciting to see that 12
team. I'm a little jealous.
Yeah.
I'm a little jealous because we would have been in my year if they had the extended the extended team brackets. But you know, it's still cool to see. I love seeing the young guys compete and get better every game. If they make a mistake one game and see them, you know, fix that mistake the next game, it's just beautiful to see because it's growth. They're getting better.
You didn't cash in on all that NIL deals either. I mean, you missed most of that, right?
No, I didn't miss that.
Did you get all of it? Oh, yeah.
Who was your biggest endorsement from? Who was your biggest sponsorship?
I had some big ones. I had French's Mustard.
Oh, man, we're talking.
I had Mercedes-Benz. I had Municipal Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
That's my guy.
Yeah. You got any French's Mustard lying around still?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had Bush's Baked Beans. Still have Bush's Baked Beans.
Nice.
What's the connection with French's Mustard? I missed that.
So when we played Ole Miss in 2021, they threw mustard bottles and golf balls at Lane Kiffin. I don't know why they were mad at Lane. He was doing his job. But they threw mustard bottles on the field, so that was kind of like a kind of a throwback back in their face.
Yeah. Hey, who do you think is the most, and you might get in trouble for this answer, but who do you think is the most athletic player in this locker room?
I don't know.
Everyone usually points to like Panay pound for pound, but to you, who do you think is the most
athletic? He is generational.
Dude? Yeah.
Like, it's amazing.
And you can see yourself. I know you can hoop now.
Yeah, I'm athletic, but some of these guys, they're doing backflips.
Yeah.
You know, jumping 40s in a vert. Like, it's crazy. David Montgomery.
Yeah.
Ja. J-Mo. And also, like, just sneaky athletic, like Sam LaPorta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty good dunk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is he making your starting five?
I don't know. I got to see his ball.
This gets asked all the time. On a race, straight linear race, you got Ja or J-Mo.
Mm.
It's tough, right?
That's so tough. It's like it's J-Mo the road runner or Sonic and Ja. I say J-Mo because he got the longer legs.
Yeah. See, I cheated. I said Ja in 40 and J-Mo in 100.
Yeah.
You catch him in the end, right? Yeah, that's a cheat. Let me close with a football one, right? You know, you've gotten some playing time here. A lot of those 42-0 halftime scores, it feels like. Can you explain how valuable those reps are to the people?
Yep.
You know, just very, getting out there for a little bit.
Very valuable. Game time situation is completely different from a controlled practice situation.
Yeah.
Where sometimes, you know, I'm playing the scout team. So, you know, it's limited reps. So, you know, we got to make sure that our guy gets those reps. So when I do get a chance to get in there, you know, just trying to maximize my opportunity, play clean, play efficient, control the huddle, move the ball down the field.
Did you know that if you scored one more, you would have had the franchise record of points? Anybody tell you that? Does Ben run that in the huddle? You know?
No, I think we just playing ball, trying to be efficient, trying to get some points out of every drive.
Of course.
That's what we're trying to do.
Last one for me. I assume in college, like you watch quarterbacks around the NFL. You have certain ideas of guys when you come into the league. But what if you've learned about Jared that maybe you didn't know about him or appreciate about him watching him from afar?
Yeah. You know, just the way that he's well organized throughout the week. You know, you know, he's a true vet.
Yeah.
You know, 9th, 10th year in the league. You know, and just picking up those little minute details, you know, from him. And then he'll lean over like, hey, you know, I do this. This could help you out.
Yeah.
Or he'll give me, like, say I'll have a bad play. He'll be like, man, don't worry about it. Like, my rookie year. Da, da, da.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, you're a great teammate. You're a great leader. So it's a blessing to be in the room with him. Jake brings an extra spark as well. Him, you know, being in the league for a good amount of time, and being in different systems. You know, he's always great to bounce ideas off, and we're always collaborating on the sideline as well.
We appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Thanks,
appreciate
man. Have a nice evening to you, brother.
Yes, sir. Y'all too.
Thank you.
And that was Hendon Hooker and Will. He's not the only one that's jealous. I wish this format would have existed in college football playoffs for a long time. I'm so excited, man.
Yeah, it just feels like so many of these games that would otherwise not matter this weekend matter in a huge way. These teams that are anywhere in the top 25 or even just, you know, certainly the top 20 have a real chance to make the playoff, and it adds a premium to all of these outcomes. But by the way, you can see why the Lions like Hendon Hooker and having him in the building and in that quarterback's room. He's a cerebral guy. He's an articulate guy.
Super thoughtful.
He's a really magnetic personality. He's a fun guy to be around. You know, who knows what his NFL career looks like in 3 years, in 5 years. But I really believe that just based on his presence that he'll play for a long time in this league.
I'm always appreciative of guys that make themselves available. And, you know, since he's been here, he's been available regularly and relatively open and honest, getting back to, you know, talk about the finger injury in yeah. training camp. So I big appreciation for him. Glad he's got some opportunities on the field and, you know, hopefully maybe he gets some more with a few more blowouts here down the stretch. All right. We're going to take another quick break and we'll be back to talk. I guess what's turned into a dreaded Thanksgiving Day game around these parts. Who knew? this is the Detroit Football Network podcast. All right. We're back and, Will, on deck is the Chicago Bears. They beat up on the Lions pretty good last time these two teams saw each other. Thanksgiving has been problematic for the Lions, which is weird. But, you know, as I said to, I don't know, some radio interview I did this. Oh, NPR. I did a little NPR spot this week, Will.
Wow.
Yeah. Big time in it.
You're going to have a byline in the Wall Street Journal soon?
We're working on it. We're going to touch all the bases we can. But this is a franchise of streak breaking right now, or an era of streak breaking.
Yep.
Dan Campbell is the breaker of chains, if you will.
Nice.
And so this is the next one up. It's Thanksgiving. And how many in a row now? Seven?
Seven in a row. Yeah.
That surprised me. I don't know. I guess I wasn't paying attention, or I was, you know, the tryptophan had kicked in. I have any idea, but, you know, here we are. What is your impressions of this matchup? And, you know, do you think the Lions are breaking the streak? We'll get into the spread later.
Yeah. Well, first of all, if Dan Campbell is a breaker of chains, then that must make Jared Goff one of his dragons, right? And who else? Who would be the other dragons of?
Sewell's the biggest one.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah,
no doubt. He'd also be the most terrifying to see become a White Walker. Like if it was Penei Sewell's eyes that turned blue, which I think they might during those games. Like when he's taking on a block, those eyes turn blue, and then the person in front of him is just dead, eviscerated, never to be seen again.
I feel like it's got to be a defender. You were just going to throw it to Brian Branch as the MVP.
World. Yeah, Branch, Sheridan, Penei, the three dragons of Dan Campbell. That's a terrifying thought.
I think
the Lions, they get off the schneid, the Thanksgiving schneid. I also think that when, you know, this offseason they were talking about having games circled on their schedule and targets of their own.
Oh, you think the Bears were one or Thanksgiving?
No, I think winning on Thanksgiving was one. I don't think it could have been Cass Tech. It could have been Michigan Tech. Could have been anyone. But I think they know that winning this game is important to this franchise and certainly this city and this fan base. And it's been too long. And certainly last year was a shocker to see them go down to Green Bay in a game that I think a lot of us thought they would win and kind of roll in. So I don't think that they will come out on Thursday with anything less than a full-bodied effort. And certainly they'll be missing some bodies, but they're going to be dialed in and ready to go for this Bears team. And so is, and maybe mostly is, David Montgomery, who when you asked him in the locker room after the game on Sunday,
smile.
If he was going to play against his former team, even as you couched it with, you know, we know you like every game and every opponent is worth playing against. When you mentioned former team, he grinned. He just grinned. As much as David Montgomery will smile to the media, he grinned. And then when Campbell was asked today if there was any chance,
played that card twice
again, any chance that he could hold him out of this game, Campbell laughed at that notion because there was no chance.
He knew
Emo is going to come out guns blazing on Thursday. You know, he told me after the game against the Jags that he really believes the Lions are the land of misfit toys. And he pointed to himself as someone who is a reject. And he said, quote, "I wasn't good enough to be in Chicago. And so Detroit took a chance on me. And I ensure every game that they know they did not make a mistake." And I just think as hard as we know he runs, he's going to hit somehow a different level on Thursday. And I think that that's just one of many ways the Lions carry themselves to a win for the first time in 7 years or 8 years on Thanksgiving.
It's so interesting because Brad Holmes came in here and started filling the roster with those guys that, quote unquote, had chips on their shoulders, something to prove. And most of them in that first year were injury reclamation projects. And most of them didn't work out. You know, for every Alex Anzalone and Khalif Raymond, there were, you know, 15 guys that
Brashad Perriman.
It was 1 year or, you know, and Brashad Perriman's about 2 months and he was gone.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to see the roster still kind of full of those guys that just the chip is unable to be filled. Even Goff. I mean,
Goff.
He still doesn't let go of so many things, and at some level, you're like, man, just move on. But like, for St. Brown, like that, being able to list those, whatever, 14 receivers, I say 14 receivers, like we haven't heard the list 8,000 times every pregame, but like the fact that he can list them, probably can tell you their stats and where they're at and how many times they've been cut. Like, if that's what fuels you, that's what fuels you. And if that's what's taking this group to the top, then so be it. But, you know, it's I'm always fascinated with like the whole talent evaluation, you know, reading between the lines at the combine with these questions about whether they love football and all that stuff. Like,
I don't
know the questions Brad Holmes asking those meetings, but whatever it is, like it does feel like his ability to tap into the psychology of football players is a really big part of what they're doing here.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, those were the players that Montgomery pointed to when I asked him, you know, who else is part of that island of misfit toys. He said, well, Jared for one, obviously, and St. Brown for another. Yep. He even brought up Anzalone as someone who was let go by the team that drafted him. And I think they came into the NFL and maybe 2 years apart or a year apart, Demo and Anzalone, but another player who had played for a long time and played pretty well, albeit through injuries, for the team that brought him into the league and then was let go by that team. And he came here with a point to prove himself. And that attitude permeates this defense and this offense. And I just, this defense is doing incredible things. I don't know if we can stress that enough, that they are now the number two scoring defense in the NFL. The offense gets so much deserved shine. I think in some ways the defense, considering the losses, deserves even more acclaim than the offense. If anyone would have believed that, minus, I'll lead with Davenport first too, minus Davenport, Hutchinson, Barnes, Anzalone, last week Arnold, and then eventually Carlton Davis, they would be the number two scoring defense in the NFL. I would have sold you a bridge from Portugal to Boston. Like, that was not even in the realm of possibility. And
is that a phrase you use in Boston?
Here I don't know if I had the
like an East Coast phrase.
I think I may have combined some metaphors there, but I think it still works. But it's just incredible, because that was the fear when Hutch went down, that the defense was going to crater, and it really has done just the opposite. And you know, look, Thursday's a certainly a big challenge, but I love this defense and this D coordinator against a young quarterback. I think the way that they can scheme and the way that they can present different looks to confuse an offense is pretty unique to this unit, and they're doing it in ways they haven't done it in the past. And then they're the number one third down defense in the NFL and the number four red zone defense in the NFL. And as Aleem McNeil told me after the game last Sunday about the red zone mentality, he was like, dude, we will break something before someone gets into the end zone. And then he said, I'm liable to die on that field before I let someone in the end zone. And they really are playing with that sort of conviction when teams approach the end zone. And look, I don't think they're going to go three straight games without allowing a touchdown, but the fact that they have gone 10 straight quarters amid all this attrition is remarkable. And it's the biggest reason to me why they are 10-1, because the offense was a given, and they could still be losing games like 35-32, if not for the defense really picking up the slack this year.
That whole attitude about willing to die might be why they're racking up all these injuries. Maybe just dial it down a hair. I feel like we're, I don't know if you watch Family Guy, I feel like we're doing the Conway Twitty bit where we've got to kill some time. We're just going to list all the injured players multiple times during this podcast.
Yeah, I was trying to do some last minute Bears research. decided that I would throw flowers to the defense instead.
Yeah, well, you know, you brought up the Packers game last year. It sparked a memory. I had talked to Graham Glasgow. You know, I don't even think it was immediately after the game, it was later, but like what happened there. And he just said, like, they came out playing with an intensity we did not expect and were not able to match. And I almost want to tie it to something Campbell said Monday, that, you know, just the little things you don't think about, but they make so much sense once they're spoken out loud about. You think about Thursday, short week on the road. It's a bigger challenge for the road team. But what Campbell was saying is, because it's the holiday, all of our family comes into town, we're kind of loaded up with distractions, and you know, you just don't focus on football in the way you should. And it sounds callous, and it's just the nature of the business. But he's like, I'm telling these guys, tell your family, hi, I love you, I'm going to work, I'll see you on Friday, or see you after the game. And you talk about circling things. Like, I think that message, you know, for as much as he said his message is rest, relax, recover, mental, is no, it's say goodbye to your family and see you in a few days is the message to remain focused on the task at hand. And I don't think there's any question this team has been focused all year long, and and this will just be another opportunity to prove it. You know, just my one key to the game, it's the same key as last week, right? The Colts were opportunistic as a defense. That's how they stayed into games. They would force turnovers. They couldn't do it last week. I think it was a big reason that the Lions won by 18 is they tried. You know, they Goff put a couple in their breadbasket and lost a fumble, but no actual turnovers. I think was really important to the result last week. Bears, as always. I mean, it doesn't matter who their defensive coordinator is. It doesn't matter. Maybe Peanut Tillman is still out there. I have no idea, the ghost of, but they are forcing turnovers at a pretty aggressive clip once again. So just going to be really, really important to be on your P's and Q's protecting the football this week, because every week turnovers matter, and particularly against an aggressive defense like this. You want to do it? You want to go to the spread?
Yeah, I'll just add in one quick thing.
Yeah,
on
a we'll go to the spread
game. I think the Bears want to force you to throw the ball. They want they want you to open it up and to challenge their secondary and to take on their pass rush. That feels like the strength of their defense is kind of the marriage between some good playmakers in the back end and obviously some good rushers up front. They really don't defend the run that well. That's obviously one of the things the Lions do best. It feels like this is another game, maybe a little bit like last week, where the Lions can take an early lead and then just kind of ride Jameer and David to a sound, rather quiet win. Obviously, they'd love to put up another 50 burger at home, but it feels like a game where if they get the lead early, they can just pound that rock. Montgomery's going to want to run the ball 65 times on Thursday and eventually find themselves in the fourth quarter with a pretty comfortable lead. So as long as they don't fall behind, which would be hard to imagine, and really have to challenge that Bears secondary, I think they should be in good shape, obviously, on Thursday.
Yeah, it's a really good secondary. I know Jalen Johnson's not having as good of a season as he did in the Big Country. He's so good.
He's
Kyler
so
Gordon.
Long.
He's excellent. And another guy, I mean, like they made a switch. They got rid of Eddie Jackson, who's just been so good there for so long. And who do they replace him with? They replaced him with Kevin Byard. And he's one of the great playmaking safeties is there, and he's only got one interception, but I mean, he's one of those guys like Glover Quinn. He's just so smart, so cerebral, always a threat to, you gotta be careful to know where he's at all time.
Do you remember Jalen Johnson's NFL debut when he lit up Marvin Jones on a crosser at Ford Field? It was his first game in 2020. It was the DeAndre Swift drop touchdown game. Jalen Johnson's debut, and he erased Marvin Jones coming across the middle. And I was like, who the hell was that guy? And from that point on, he really has been one of the best DBs in the NFL. And he still plays with that kind of aggressiveness.
I did not think they were going to keep him.
Shout out Marv. Hope he's doing well. I didn't mean to tarnish his name with that memory.
Yeah, there goes. That was a podcast guest I had lined
up. That was the home run. That was the home run swing you made, Marvin Jones.
That was more of a bunt single, but he's out. All right, 10.5, Will. That's these lines are getting aggressive by the week, and I'm gonna tell you right off the bat, and I don't know if you'll agree with me, but I'm not taking any more points in this. That is a lot of points against, I think, a kind of an underrated Chicago team that is hanging around in all these games they're losing. And we talked about Thanksgiving. I'm not giving any more damn points to Chicago.
I would need to take Chicago 14.5. I think this is a game that the Lions lead by 10 plus for most of the afternoon. And unless the Bears pull a sneaky touchdown at the end, I don't think they're ever blown out, but I don't think they're realistically in this game from, say, like, early third quarter on. And I think the Lions just cruise again. And I know I am so casual about it, but I don't know how else to approach this team when they play again as a unit kind of poorly last week and win in dominant fashion. So yeah, I will certainly hammer Lions 10.5, and yeah, I would need 14 and a hook to take Chicago.
Gosh, man, we're seeing this one different. I think I probably would have taken the Lions at 7. 10.5 is a little too aggressive for me. So I think for the first time in a while, I'm taking the points in this one.
I respect it. The Bears gave them hell last season. That's true. I mean, they outplayed that for 7.5 quarters.
Game. It just doesn't matter. That's division games, right? Like, that's just how it goes in division games across this league. And you certainly saw it from the Bears in the last two. You know, they pushed the Packers, who are playing really, really well, to the brink. They got down big to the Vikings, but came back. And like I said, Caleb's playing pretty well since their coordinator switched two weeks ago. He hasn't turned the ball over. I don't know if he's fumbled. He hasn't thrown an interception in 5 weeks. So he's been watching his Jared Goff tape, studying it up. Makes sense.
Yeah. I got one more for the listeners out there. If you guys are looking to hang out with Jack Fox after a home win, he told me this week, he used to be a tin roof guy, but he's gotten too loud for him now, which I can relate to as a 32-year-old myself. He's now the break man is his spot after a post game, after a win in Detroit. And he was laughing. I was like, do you get recognized? You get noticed? And he's like, well, yeah.
Oh, did he tell you?
Only because all of my friends and family are wearing Jack Fox jerseys. He said he likes that he can be on this team and go pretty much anywhere else in public and not get noticed. But that is his post game spot. If you want to slide by and try and catch him on Thursday afternoon.
Oh man, Jack's a good guy. He did not throw
great guy.
The bus.
One of the best guys. Throw, a lot of good guys in the locker room.
He did not throw me under the bus. I'm going to throw myself under the bus here. I ran into Jack Fox at the break room, and more appropriately,
the break man.
Break man. I'm sorry. Little Penny Reds. Fried chicken.
Nice.
He's a fried chicken and Bud Light guy. If you need to know. After Will's own heart, but. I was there for, I think I was watching the Michigan Ohio State game last year with some friends and, you know, probably a few drinks in.
Yeah.
And Jack stopped and said hello when he saw me. And I didn't recognize him. Didn't recognize him. And, I mean, he was wearing a Rice Owls hat, which I just nothing processed. And talk about embarrassing, man.
Yeah, that's tough.
And so he definitely told Greg. From the Lions. So Greg has given me some grief over it, but I big time Jack Fox, and I still feel bad about it.
He's never going to join this podcast because of that, unless we record it from the break, man. then he'd happily do it.
This is an idea. This is an idea. We'll
Penny Reds and Bud Light
love Penny Reds, underrated. But we have gone off all kinds of tangents today. Little Game of Thrones, chicken wings, Conway Twitty, bridges to Portugal to Boston. So
it's not like one of our player interviews.
so
completely
true.
Unplanned.
So we should wrap it up. As always, Zach Clark, producing this podcast, doing great work, being available to us in our chaotic schedule. We really appreciate him. Podcast is available all the places: Odyssey, Spotify, Apple Podcast. You know, please listen, download, rate. You guys have been really nice with those ratings, and we appreciate it.
I don't think
we are making any more money off of it, but we appreciate it anyway. You find Will's work, 971theticket.com. Find my work at DetroitFootball.net. Detroit Football Podcast is named after my site. That's pretty cool. So for Will Birchfield, I'm Justin Rogers. As always, thanks for listening.
Peace.